Iran announced the execution of a British-Iranian national accused of spying for Britain.
Maybe the government is sending a signal to those who might considering to abandon the regime. We have already seen several former diplomats criticizing the government.
Plus, oil industry watchers say Iran increased its oil exports last year despite being under U.S. sanctions. We'll find out how Tehran did that. And later in the program, a European researcher explains how Western sanctions on Iran and Russia are driving the two partners to develop new trade routes.
They're bound by anti-Americanism, and they also want to capitalize on new opportunities. And this is where trade comes in.
From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Iran.
Good morning. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington.
And I'm Steve Miller. Iran has executed a British-Iranian national. Ali Reza Akbari was a former Iranian deputy defense minister. He had been charged with spying for Britain. On Saturday, Iran's Mizan news agency announced Akbari's hanging death, but it was not clear when the execution took place. He was arrested back in 2019. Joining us from VOA's Persian service to distinguish fact from propaganda is Simak Degampour.
Steve, thanks for having me. Alireza Akbari is coming from a religious and a revolutionary family with 6 years of military service during the Iran-Iraq war. So he was kind of very close to the government, close to the current head of the Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, and among the advisors of the nuclear negotiation team. A year before Mahmoud Ahmadinejad came to power, he was arrested because of, according to Iranian government, some espionage activities and released later. And then apparently he left the country and he was living in Europe. And interestingly, while he was living in Europe, he was defending the government in his interviews that he was conducting while he was over there. But as he returned to Iran, he was arrested, and according to his voice messages, he was tortured to a forced confessions after thousands of hours of interrogations. So it's interesting, very interesting and sad case. But we need to be mindful that he was not the only former Iranian government official living outside of Iran. There are others kind of like him living in Europe and even in the U.S. With his execution, maybe the government is sending a signal to those who are considering to abandon the regime. We have already seen several former diplomats criticizing the government's extremist foreign policy. We must also consider that there has always been a rivalry among different factions of security services in Iran. Some loyal to Russia and China don't want anyone defending the significance of their relations with the West. And don't forget that there are several other dual nationals from the UK, the US, and other European countries in Iran. So in a way, the government in Iran is trying to push back against the UK government's pressure against the execution of protesters. We also must remember that the government was humiliated by the wave of intelligence failures in the past couple of years and wanted to respond.
Thank you very much for explaining that in great detail. You know, on a similar note, Mohammad Barouhani was sentenced to death, and then the courts in Iran ordered a review of his case. Can you explain what exactly is being reviewed and any updates?
There are many cases, unfortunately, for potential executions, including Mohammad Barouhani that you mentioned, that have been put on hold. We actually don't know what is happening inside the government. We don't know there are reasons for it, that why they pushed it so quickly. You know, some of these convictions came in 24 to 48 hours court proceedings. So up to now, They haven't carried it, and we hope that they won't carry out those executions.
And finally, I wanted to ask you about the protests themselves in Iran, because in Paris on Monday, some 12,000 people gathered in front of the Eiffel Tower, chanting in solidarity for the opposition in Iran. But with the increased number of people being given the death penalty, the increased crackdowns in Iran, how is the current protest movement being affected?
You know, Steve, we are in the fifth month, actually, of the protests. The opposition seems solidified around the push for designating the IRGC as a terrorist organization. This could have significant implications for Iranian officials working in Iran's embassy across Europe. And also, many IRGC affiliates that as front companies are working in Europe. Inside Iran, we see another wave of worker strikes. Just today, we had those reports coming from the energy sectors. So protesters also have changed tactics to different form of hanging posters, writings on the walls, shouting "Death to Khamenei" during the night. So they've moved from being very upfront on the streets to some other way of showing their dismay and their concern about the way the government is responding to their demands.
Siamak Degampour is a journalist with VOA's Persian service. Thank you very much for joining us this week on Flashpoint Iran.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
London-based commodity markets data company Kepler tells VOA that it believes Iran recorded a big increase in energy exports last year, even as the U.S. continued its policy of demanding a global ban on Iranian oil sales. Kepler estimates that Iran grew its average daily exports of crude oil and gas condensates from 668,000 barrels per day in 2021 to 877,000 barrels per day last year. That's a jump of 31% for 2022. Humayun Falakshahi is a Kepler oil analyst. I got him on the phone and asked what he thinks is behind the apparent major growth in Iran's energy exports.
I think it's a combination of things. First of all, since the end of 2020, we've had a rebound, generally saying, in the oil market. So supply and demand continue to grow in 2022 at around a bit less than 2 million barrels per day. So I mean, the market got bigger, so obviously there was a bigger share for Iran as well. But also it's the fact that we think that, generally saying, looking at the methods that are being used, Iran is feeling a bit more confident in how much oil it can ship. And on the other side, as you know, we went through a big energy prices crisis throughout 2022, especially in the first half of the year. And I think that meant that to an extent, the U.S. could not afford to really pay attention to how much Iran was shipping. And basically, the U.S. could not afford to tighten the screws on that trade relationship between Iran and China, because if they did that, then that meant less oil in the market, and that could have pushed prices a bit higher too. So I think it's a combination of things that led to Iran being able to ship more oil last year in 2022.
You mentioned that Iran appeared to be feeling more confident in terms of exporting its oil last year. What do you think is behind that greater confidence?
I think to an extent, they had to fight for their market share a bit more than they had compared to the previous years. And it's a bit of a geopolitical issue as well. It's the fact that we are seeing a lot more Russian oil in Asia. And so at the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war, we had seen a big increase in Russian exports to Asia, mostly to India, but also to China. And at the same time, so that was around April, May, just after the war started, we saw a big decrease, about halving of exports from Iran to China. And so that means that the national Iranian oil company had to fight back in order to get back its market share. And so we believe that they offered larger discounts to Chinese buyers in order to secure the market share that they had. And so we saw a bump in their exports. And then lately in the second half of 2022, we saw a major increase in oil getting into China. So, for example, in December, arrivals into China reached almost an all-time high. It was the second highest ever on a monthly basis. And because China is the main buyer of Iranian oil, then if China buys more oil, that means more oil from Iran as well.
You talked about Iran having to engage in a bit of a price war last year to keep up its exports to major customers like China. How does that price war behavior affect the amount of money that Iran gets from its oil exports?
Well, if you assume that the volumes stay the same, then obviously it affects it in a negative way. But as you know, your revenues are a function of volumes and prices. So if you reduce your pricing by, let's say, 10%, but on the other side, you increase your volumes by as much, then there's no negative impact on it. So given the fact that they've increased their exports by about 30% year on year in 2022 compared to 2021, and given the fact that prices globally saying have been higher in 2022 compared to 2021, we believe that despite the fact that they've had to offer large discounts, especially since May 2022, they've probably have had an increase in revenues year on year compared to 2021. But for sure, I mean, the fact that there's increased competition in the region with Russia, and the fact that we believe in IEC, the National Iranian Oil Company, had to offer larger discounts, is for sure affecting the revenues.
Do you have any idea how much revenue Iran actually made from its energy exports last year? Or is that still kind of unclear based on, you know, what the Iranians themselves are saying and what you are seeing from your own research?
That is something that's extremely difficult to assess because it's not exactly clear how much they are getting paid. Obviously, the pricing is not transparent, but also the amount of actual trade going on, or whether they're able to bring back the revenues from this trade into the country is absolutely unclear. We know for a fact that even before the U.S. exited the nuclear deal in 2018, when the secondary sanctions were lifted, it was already difficult back then for the NIOC to get access to its revenues that it was due from its oil exports. So there's a big mystery about the pricing and a big mystery about how much of that they're able to bring back. But if you look at the amount of exports and you assume maybe an average price of around $65 to $70 per barrel, including the discount that they have to give, maybe you should get somewhere between $20 and $25 billion.
How important a role do Iranian oil exports play in the global oil market in terms of influencing oil prices day to day?
It's not a big deal. It's not a big role because right now, so Iran exported on average close to 900,000 barrels per day in 2022. That's roughly about 1% of total oil supply. It's a bit more. It's roughly about, let's say, 1.5 to 2% of global oil that's traded globally that's been exported. So yes, it does have an impact on the global oil situation and prices. But I think Iran's role is quite important for an energy security situation globally. And that's probably one of the main reasons why China continues to buy. I mean, obviously, China is also in a conflictual situation with the U.S. So they're not going to basically take care of U.S. potential sanctions on Chinese firms. And even though they're trying to hide their buying from Iran as well, they continue to do so. And I assume that Washington knows very well how much China has been buying from Iran. But at the same time, what's important for both the U.S. and for China is the fact that if China does not buy oil from Iran, then there's basically almost no buyers left. And that means that for a security point of view, in the you know, in the Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz, you could get to a situation where the government in Iran, the regime, is much more tempted, let's say, to block the Strait of Hormuz. And blocking the Strait of Hormuz would have then catastrophic consequences on prices, because you have 40% of global oil that's traded every day that passes through that choke point. And so I think that this would increase tensions in the region. And it's something that even the previous president, Hassan Rouhani, who was a bit more moderate, obviously, than the current one, used to say that if we are not able to export our oil via the Strait of Hormuz, then no one in the region should be able to do that. So this is what leads us to believe that it's a risk that is deemed important for both the U.S. and China not being worth taking.
Humayun Falakshahi, senior oil analyst at Kepler in Paris. Great to have you on Flashpoint Iran this week.
Thank you.
Visit voanews.com and click on the Iran tab at the top of the page for additional updates on Iran throughout the day.
A report published last month by Bloomberg shed more light on efforts by Russia and Iran to develop trade routes that may shield them from Western sanctions. Bloomberg said it compiled ship tracking data showing dozens of Russian and Iranian vessels, some of them sanctioned, delivering cargoes between the two nations last year through the Caspian Sea and the rivers that feed into it. For more on this, I spoke by phone with Maria Shagina, an analyst with the Britain-based International Institute for Strategic Studies. Shagina said the Western sanctions imposed on Russia for its full-scale invasion of Ukraine last year have pushed Moscow to seek circumvention advice from other nations sanctioned by the West.
So the relationship between Iran and Russia are probably the most flourishing at the moment. We see a number of statements from both countries that they aim to increase trade turnover, that they plan to establish new trade routes. Also, Putin visited Iran in July, the first country outside of post-Soviet space. So it tells us quite a lot that these relationships are quite important for Russia at the moment, again, against the background of international isolation. So both countries have established this marriage of convenience. They are bound by anti-Americanism, by shared vision of a multipolar world order, and they also want to capitalize on new opportunities. And this is where trade comes in. So the international North-South transport corridor is not necessarily new, but it's part of the Soviet legacy that Soviet Union reached out to the global south in the past, and Russia is revitalizing this past connections. So this corridor is the key element of the Eurasian transport network, and it opens avenues to Russia, to the global south, to Turkey, to China, to Iran, with the maritime route to India. So it's quite handy given that majority of the global south didn't impose sanctions.
Now, what is Russia doing to revitalize this trade route?
On the one hand, it's pivoting to Asia in general, but also more increasingly to Middle East. And this is where relationships with Turkey, with Iran are very important to observe here. In June, the Kremlin has signed a decree to invest a lot in railways, in ports, in roads, to really disrupt this dependency on the West. Because if we look at the map, Russia's infrastructure is really geared towards the West historically. So in order to offset the impact of sanctions, you need alternative infrastructure. Some of it is there, some of it is dilapidated, but for the majority, it just doesn't exist. So you really need to invest capital, technology to create it from scratch. Now, to Iran, there are some routes that are existing, but there are still quite a lot of chunks of logistic chains that are not there. So Russia still need to invest like $12 billion to compensate.
Can you tell our listeners what these projects actually will look like when we talk about Russia needing to create from scratch trade routes that, you know, involve Iran?
So we have to take Russia's announcement with a pinch of salt. They announced quite a lot, but whether it will come to its fruition, to it will be materialized, is another question mark. Because for both Iran and Russia to tap capital markets, both Iran and Russia have announced that they will invest over $25 billion, is complicated because capital markets are closed off for both countries. Also, these routes, these infrastructure projects will need technology. And again, spare parts usually in the past came from the West, both for Iran and Russia. So two countries will face limitations what they can do. It's not to say it will be impossible, but it comes in with a price tag. And also whether there will be a political will. So at the moment, this international isolation seems to drive them together. There is a push to do so, but it's not necessarily guaranteed they will see smooth infrastructure projects between these two countries.
Well, Russia is seeking, as you were saying earlier, to develop more markets in the global south, in places like India, for example. But how much of a risk is Russia taking by planning to invest so much money to try to get its products to countries like India that may not be so committed in the long term to trade with Russia versus, let's say, having better relations with the West, which has been increasing sanctions on Russia lately and even on Iran?
To me, that underlines the power of sanctions, what they can do to a country that is so dependent on Western markets, in particular energy markets. So for Russia to diversify to new markets, to find new buyers in the area where everyone is decoupling, is diversifying or going through green transition, will be very hard. So for the moment, India and China are capitalizing on cheap Russian commodities, oil, timber, metals, fertilizers. But long term, Russia will have to think how to establish a new economic model. Because in the past, it was Russian exports of hydrocarbons in exchange for Western technology and capital. Now it has to sell it to the global south. Who will step in? Maybe someone from the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia or the UAE. But that long-term strategy is just not there, because you have to create new infrastructural links, also new financial channels, which is now the main question mark because of the sanctions. So again, it's a game of adaptation. How quickly will Russia adapt to it, and how quickly the impact of sanctions will kick in?
Well, what is your expectation going forward for how Russia and Iran are going to navigate the increasing sanctions that they're facing from the West?
They will definitely navigate, because that's their survival game and that's the only game in town. Their economic pie will shrink, so we will not see economic growth. But both countries will learn from each other, will assist each other in circumventing sanctions. But ultimately, Iran and Russia have limitations in terms of their trade structure, what they can trade between each other, because they are both natural exporters of fossil fuels, metals, fertilizers. So they can't really exchange too much together. But what they need is advanced technology that they can't access. So this is the limitations of the sanctions plan.
Maria Shagina, Senior Research Fellow for Economic Sanctions, Standards and Strategy at the International Institute for Strategic Studies, speaking to us from Berlin. Thank you for being with us on Flashpoint Iran.
Thank you for having me.
And that brings us to the end of this week's program. There's, of course, more coverage of Iran 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, as well as on our social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm Steve Miller, and on behalf of Michael Lippin and the entire Flashpoint Iran team, thank you for listening.